We had the behind the scenes view of what you're going to hear. Now, you have questions. They've got the answers, and Car Talk, eat your heart out. So please welcome Amy Bloom and Mary Jane.
Go ahead, Doc. More.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Welcome, everybody, and thank you all for joining us this evening and spending a few fun-filled moments, we hope, talking about, of course, the most important topic in the world, women's mental and physical health, which we all celebrate. And first, we'd all, of course, like to celebrate the Middlesex County Foundation for Women and Girls and the Middlesex County Community Found. It's really terrific, and thank them all for organizing this. I'm going to start by just acknowledging where we are for the moment, and because several of my patients this week did bring this up, and I promised them I would discuss this, and I happen to have a question that's germane to that. And I will read you the question. This is, we didn't plant any of these. None of this is planted. These are all genuine questions, okay? And this question says, how do you feel about Representative Susio proposing an amendment that removes funding from Planned Parenthood? Now, why is that germane to where we're sitting right now is that, of course, that I'm sure many of you do know how Katharine Hepburn felt about Planned Parenthood, especially since the fact that her mother helped found Connecticut Planned Parenthood. And Katharine's mother is smiling at us from heaven discussing this issue right now. And you can guess how I feel about removing funding from this wonderful organization. So anyway, so we owe a debt of acknowledgement to gratitude to the Hepburn family. And I would also like to... we'd like to introduce each other, just a bit of information about
That's
each other.
That's true. I won't tell you the specifics of the circumstances of the medical appointment during which Mary Jane and I came up with this idea. but it is true that we know each other really, really well.
Inside out.
And we have known each other since we were both 26. I came to Mary Jane's practice, and I was pregnant, and happily for both of us, I have to say, Tom Hansen, the grown-up, was on vacation, and he said, but I have this great girl, you know, and she'll be delivering your baby. And as it turns out, you know, it was a great girl and a great woman and a terrific baby, and we have been friends and patient and doctor and writer and reader ever since. For me, one of the reasons when Mary Jane and I were talking about doing something like this together, it came both out of our interest in informing people, not just, as we say, not just women, but the people who love them, and also wanting a chance to sort of take this on the road and share some of our thoughts about health, both physical and mental. And I think for me, it was realizing that in all the years that I had known Mary Jane, I had never asked her a question to which she did not have not only a good answer, but I would later discover the bubble.
And I must say, many of you, of course, know Amy as a fabulous, fabulous writer, and you've read, you know, Away and, you know, Where the God of Love Hangs Out and all those other great books. I must confess, I was sort of pissed when she became a writer because she was a damn good therapist, and I used to send her a lot of patients, and I was very upset when she left practice, but I did realize that her extreme, you know, competence at emotional health and mental health really gave her a tremendous background for writing the fabulous literature that she's written with a very empathic understanding of all of this. So she's a pretty good damn counselor here. So we're going to try to answer some of your questions. We'll try to get through as many as we possibly can from both of our viewpoints and try to, you know, a little bit different focus perhaps from each one of us.
And if there's something that isn't on one of the cards or it occurs to you to write a card, please signal to some... There we go. And pass the cards up front. And if you are in a particularly forthcoming mood and you find yourself later on wanting to stand up and ask the question, that's fine too. I'm gonna kick off here. It will not surprise you. A lot of questions. It's true there were some questions about belly fat. There are a lot of questions about sex.
Surprise!
And I'm going to try to summarize these because all of you have your own particular ways of expressing yourself on the subject. On the medical end, will there be a female version of Viagra soon? I have been sleeping with my husband for 10 years plus. How do I get excited like it's the first time? How do I get my libido back? Gone, gone, gone.
This is not our literature. This is your literature, folks.
Yeah.
Verbatim.
I don't need to make this up. I have a 1951 French-Canadian model with all original working parts. The problem is that when his engine is revving, mine is usually idling or stalled. How can I improve or jumpstart my sex drive to be on pace with my 1951 counterpart? My 1955 original parts just don't oil up the way they used to. Not nicely put, by the way.
You like them. You love them.
What do you do when you've been out of the mood for several years? And your husband is also. What's out there to increase a woman's libido, and does it work? Where do you buy it? Does chemo, radiation after breast surgery kill your libido? What to do? And what do we do for women who lose their desire for sex? And where is my sex drive? I seem to have misplaced it.
Can I throw in just a couple of more random thoughts? And what do you do for extreme vaginal dryness? But we'll throw in a few more things here.
And what I thought I would do is I would try to sort of respond to some of the issues in this cluster, and then after talking about sort of the psychological component, turn it over to Mary Jane, who could then talk to you about the wonderful world of hormones. I think there are a couple of things that strike me about the question about what did I do with my libido, which seems to me that there are a couple of different categories, even medically speaking, of loss of libido. The one that I, you know, that I used to hear in my practice and that, you know, I still hear from friends is not that I don't want to have sex. It's more like a woman who has been making dinner for a family of four for 30 years. She still likes to go out. She likes to be taken to a nice restaurant. What she doesn't want to do is make spaghetti and meatballs for four people every night. We don't say about that woman, oh, she has lost all interest in eating. What we say is she has lost interest in cooking, which is not the same thing. And so I think that the case for lots of women is not that they have no appetite for sex and no interest in sex, but the way in which she and her spouse, whether male or female, approached sex is not working in the same way anymore. And what that usually indicates is that it would be time for a frank conversation. One of the things that struck me about a lot of these questions is this my fault? And I want to say, although it is true that there are things that are our fault, failing to return library books. Checking the caller ID and going, I don't think so. Those things are your fault, and you should, in fact, feel a little bad. This is not your fault, but this does require discussion. It does require saying to the person that you have sex with, the way we've been doing it, I've had a change of heart. I know I have been, you know, putting Thousand Island dressing on my salad since 1976. Now I'd like balsamic. This is not the worst thing you can say to somebody. And if you say to your husband or your spouse, if you can do this, it will make it much, much better, and we will both have a better time, you're likely to get good results. I would also say, from the psychotherapist's point of view, if you say that to your spouse and he or she says, I don't care if you have a good time, you have a different problem. And it is not your libido, and it is not your fault, and if you talk to us afterwards, we can give you the name of a good lawyer. I think that with something like a hysterectomy, there is, of course, you know, a very real hormonal and physical component, and there is also the sense of loss. I think one of the things that women struggle with is a sense that it is wrong to feel bad. You know, it's unappealing, it's unattractive, it's sad, it's not good. There's a question that Mary Jane has in which somebody said something about approaching menopause with gusto. And I said to her, is that really necessary? You know, do we have to be enthusiastic, you know? Couldn't we be, you know, sort of resigned and cheerful and making the best of the good parts and bearing up under the best? You know, do we have to be, thrilled? It seems thrilled is a lot to ask. And what I want to say is, if you've had a total hysterectomy and you find that your libido is gone, I think the first thing you have to do is give yourself permission for it to be gone. It's not a crime. It's not like you ran over a child in the street, you know? It's difficult, and it requires conversation, and it probably requires some medical attention as well. But I think the first thing you do is give yourself permission. And the second thing you do is you ask yourself some really honest questions like, do I mind? Or does he mind? This is not to say that if he minds, you should ignore that fact, but it would also be useful for you to know really what you feel. One of the things I asked Mary Jane one time, I said, so I'm hearing all this stuff about libido, and I had been contacted actually at one point about the company that, from the company that developed Viagra, about their extremely expensive programs to develop a pill for female sexual desire. And I said, what is the absolute guaranteed best treatment on this planet for a menopausal woman with a loss of libido? And Mary Jane said, if you look at all the really good medical research, the answer is a new partner.
It's true.
This is not to say, this is not to say that you cannot turn your old partner into a newer partner without trading him in entirely. But it is also to say it is, your bodies are not necessarily betraying you. They may be informing you. And part of what they are telling you is, we would like to do things differently now, please. We have done them this way for a long time. We are absolutely ready for a surprise. And then you have to negotiate, you know, like anything else, like the way women plan their own surprise birthday parties. You have to negotiate the moment in which somebody attractively attired will jump out of the cake. And at this stage in life, what I would say is often for women, that would not be you. Somebody else can jump out of the cake now. And it's not unreasonable to ask. Let me turn it over to you for the hormonal part.
Okay, we can do hormones. No. Everything Amy said is absolutely true. And there is a huge, huge emotional, psychological component to all of this. There's no question about it. There is also, unfortunately, for many women, a physical component as well. And our goal is to try to help you optimize everything. The most important physical thing, and one of the questions, you know, what do you do for extreme vaginal dryness, things like that, is unfortunately that the way I describe the ovaries, sort of like planned obsolescence. Our ovaries poop out, folks. Average age is 51. That's what happens. Sometimes they get yanked out by some crazy gynecologist, something like that. And they sometimes go to about age 60, but sometimes they poop out at age 35. So there's a wide range of normal. There is. I just gave this lecture to the med students this morning. But we have to cope with it. And unfortunately, the tissue in the body that has the most what we call estrogen receptors, that these little cells that sit around sort of going like little Pac-Men to estrogen molecules, that's basically the vaginal tissue. That's why I get to call this vagina talk. You know I get it in there somehow. So anyway, so the vaginal tissue can get dry, okay? And so estrogen is really helpful to moisturize the vagina. There are non-estrogenic ways that we can use for people who are reluctant to use even vaginal estrogens, although trust me, vaginal estrogens are quite safe for just about everybody because the amount that gets absorbed systemically is really minuscule. But we can make the vagina happy. And so when I have somebody who's come, I am a great believer in the concept of the happy vagina, thank you. You all know that, come on, you know I'm into happy vaginas. So anyway, But the key thing is, so when I have somebody who's coming in with these issues, and you, many of you know that we've discussed these things on occasion, that this is a real problem. And one of the things that I always assess first is what's going on with the vagina. Is it dry? Is it uncomfortable? And I've gotten yelled at by such wonderful authorities as Dr. Ruth when I will get up in public and say, well, I think somebody that would want to have sex if it hurts is crazy. Dr. Ruth has chided me and says, Mary Jane, why should you say a crazy person? It's not nice. And I said, but Dr. Ruth, if somebody wanted to have sex and it hurt, what would you say? Well, she's crazy. So, you know, true conversation, folks. I don't make this stuff up. So anyway, the key thing is when I have somebody who's got significant vaginal dryness, I can fix that, and I can fix that easily. Even if this woman hasn't had sex for 20 years, I can fix this. It's a wonderful feeling of power, let me tell you. So anyway, so she meets this live one in Miami Beach. You know, it's a true story. So anyway, so they come in, and I make the vagina happy. We get some estrogen on board. She's happy. Now, there are many women that's sufficient, and they'll say, cool, I'm great, that's fine, thank you very much, I'm good. There are also people that we fix the vagina, and they're still like, you know, okay, what action? I'd rather go watch, you know, Wolf Blitzer on the TV, you know. And it happens, we know this. So anyway, so if you're still more interested in CNN than your partner, there are other things that we can do, like communicating with them instead of watching CNN, for example. That's another thing you can do, and Amy's discussed that. But there are some other hormonal interventions that may be in order. And there are some things that contribute to libido. What it is, we don't know, and for different people, it's different. Some women respond to estrogen systemically. There are plenty of estrogen receptors in the brain, which are not saturated once we go through menopause. It may be testosterone, and many of my patients say to me, testosterone, that's a guy's hormone. I'll say, but we make plenty too, and our levels do go down postmenopausally. There's no question about that. It may be a hormone like DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone, which is made by both ovaries and adrenal glands, and guys make it too. And their levels start going down in the 30s, just like our levels start going down in our 30s. And that's not necessarily a menopausal phenomenon. So there are other hormones that are involved in libido. And I think the important thing is when you are faced with these issues, which is, as clearly we have a lot of questions relating to this, it's a common problem, is talk to your partner. And talk to, you know, talk to us, talk to people like Amy, talk to people like me, and let's see what we can do to help you intervene. I think it's something that's, you know, eminently should be dealt with, and we can help, I think.
I want to add something to that, because I think the point that Mary Jane is making is that even after hormonal treatment, lots of women find this issue to be ongoing. And one of the things that I've observed is that, first of all, often women would prefer to go to their doctor and get hormonal treatment than discuss it with their partner, you know. It is true that there is the question, is it my fault? But there's also true that one often prefers for it to be one's fault, because then you can fix it, right? If I broke it or I am broken, then I take the steps to fix it. It is all in my control. If I have to turn to my partner and say, something is different between us, not just within me, but between us, there's always the possibility, not even a small possibility, that he or she will fail us. They will not respond well. We hope that they respond well, but I think the fear that often drives women to look for things like the female Viagra is in fact the sense that they will fix it themselves, and therefore they will never have to discuss it with their partner. They will never have to say, hey, something is different, and we need to pay attention to this, not I need to go off and have a conversation with my completely fabulous and adorable OBGYN, Mary Jane Minkin, but that actually you and I, in a moment where probably neither of us is feeling particularly fabulous or adorable, need to really talk about the ins and the outs and the mechanics of the situation.